The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker tov, yeah, pretty good, thanks. In the spirit of trying to also add things that are non-corona related to our conversation, I wondered if you guys had heard about Noah Kirel, whether you'd actually played any of your music on the station. I think it would be worthwhile.
What's her name?
Is Noah Kirel. She's 19 years old.
Wow, I don't think we have.
She is Israel's latest up-and-coming star. She's a name that people are going to hear about for sure in the not-too-distant future. We'll jump to the end because Noah recently signed a recording contract with the American label Atlantic Records, the first Israeli ever to have done so. She's only 19. She's in the IDF. She actually hails from my home city of Ra'anana. She's been involved in TV and entertainment for some time. She's been one of these kind of, I compare her a little bit to the Britney Spears and Danny Lovato kind of era, because she's come up through children's TV and been on,
I see that, she's MTV Europe Music
show.
Awards.
Yeah.
Right. Amazing.
Yeah, she's been on a reality TV show, for people who, whose parents really pushed them very hard to achieve things. And she was definitely one of those. Her father apparently was one of those pushers. But it seems to have succeeded some way because she's really doing some amazing things. Noah Kirel, she was actually born Noya. Here's a very interesting story. Born Noya, but when she was quite young, she had a serious kidney illness, and a rabbi suggested that she should change her name from, her parents should change her name from Noya to Noah. Noah meaning on the move, from Tnua. She changed her name to Noah. She's now 19, and watch out for her, Noah Kirel.
Awesome. We definitely will watch out for her. We'll do more than that. We will get hold of some of her music and play that for our listeners. So that is amazing. Thank you, Anthony, for that. The Bank of Israel has decided to maintain interest rates at their current levels. They've also initiated a number of plans to assist the economy through the current crisis. What has the bank decided to do?
So tough times for people who are trying to marshal an economy during this particular period. Israel's interest rates before the meeting of the Monetary Committee of the Bank of Israel were at 0.1%. And what many economies are trying to do is to reduce interest rates. And so if Israel had to reduce interest rates, it would have to reduce them to negative rates, which is not unheard of. It happens. It has happened. It's quite unusual. But the Bank of Israel, in its wisdom, decided not to reduce the interest rate from 0.1%. It retained it at that level. But it did take a couple of decisions to try somehow to prop up the credit market, to try to allow credit to be extended to people who are suffering through the whole coronavirus issue. They decided, for example, that they're going to purchase corporate bonds up to a value of about 15 billion shekels. And these are they set certain standards. They need to be Israeli companies. The bonds need to be shekel denominated. And the whole idea is somehow to try to help corporates, companies out there who have bonds in the market, somehow to retain some level of stability to the value of their corporate bonds. And in addition to that, the bank also decided to create an infrastructure for expanding the range of assets that banks can use to put up as collateral against credit as part of a special plan. And the whole idea is that this will then enable the banks to be a little bit more flexible in extending credit to people who need the credit in order to see their way through the current crisis. The bad news is that the Bank of Israel decided that it's forecasting Israel's GDP to contract during 2020 by 6%. That's an astonishing number. I don't suppose it's very surprising given what we already know about what corona is doing to our economy, but 6% is a very, very substantial number. We hope somehow that may reverse. Interestingly, the inflation rate is expected to be in negative numbers, -1.1%, even though originally it was forecast to be a little more than that, about 0.7%.
Right.
But be that as it may, still very, very low negative inflation, very, very low interest rates, more credit being extended, but our economy obviously contracting quite substantially as a result of this. And let's hope that some of these measures will help to somehow boost the economy. I know that the Prime Minister yesterday met with Professor Stanley Fisher, former governor of the Bank of Israel, and subsequently was appointed the deputy chair of the U.S. Federal Reserve. He's currently visiting Israel. And, of course, the Prime Minister met also together with the current Bank of Israel governor, Professor Amir Yaron. They had a meeting yesterday. Professor Fisher clearly has a lot of experience both in Israel and in the U.S., and I guess that his advice on how to manage the economy under the current circumstances would have been keenly listened to, and let's hope that he had some good advice to allow people somehow to be able to make their way through this crisis and to get out of the other side all in one piece.
Yeah, but there is a tremendous amount of disillusionment at the moment in Israel around the handling of COVID-19. What is the source of that?
Well, I think that, I mean, there are a few things. Obviously, the second wave is not helping anybody's confidence in what's going on right now. I think there's also an element of whatever you do, you will be damned, because I don't think there are any right answers. Whatever people choose to do, they will always be criticized from one party or another. I think it's very, very easy to criticize what is happening. I think it's very difficult to come up with sensible plans as to what ought to be done. It was interesting yesterday that Israel's most senior public health official, Professor Sigal Sadetsky, resigned in quite a storm from her position at the Ministry of Health. She's very disillusioned with the policies that are currently being taken. She called them frivolous and unsubstantiated, populist decision making. Those are some of the words that she used in her resignation letter that was published also on Facebook. And she feels that, you know, there are better things that could be done. She put a few suggestions forward, some of which are kind of, you know, relatively obvious and maybe are not being pursued enough. I think they're being somewhat pursued, but maybe not vigorously enough, in order to try somehow to stem the tide of what's happening at the moment. So she's disillusioned. A lot of people are criticizing the government for having alternative interests. For example, when it was decided not to close down the yeshivot, it was taken as a response to a threat by the religious parties to bring the government down if they chose to close the yeshivot down. So therefore, the decision not to close the yeshivot was immediately attributed to the brinkmanship on the part of the religious parties. And of course, the Prime Minister was accused of pandering to their needs rather than to think about what the country really needs. And I think that there is an independent decision that needs to be made about whether it's good to close the yeshivot down or whether it's better to keep them open, because some people will think that sending all the yeshiva boys home to their families in very, very, very crowded neighborhoods would be more detrimental to their public health than keeping them somehow isolated within a yeshiva environment and having some greater level of control if you're able to get into that yeshiva. So, you know, there are definitely different schools of thought. But at the moment, I think because of the rising numbers and because of the feeling that this is kind of a train that's hurtling down the track without any brake at the moment, that people are feeling very, very disillusioned and wondering whether the Prime Minister is really controlling the ship. He seems to have been absent in some of the press briefings that have been going on recently, whereas during the first
wave, he was there almost every day.
Visible. So obviously people are saying he only wants to be associated with success in the moment. Things don't go quite so well, then his face is absent from the press briefings, and you know, a lot of criticism being directed at him because people feel that he is pandering to personal interests rather than taking the best interests of the country into consideration. I think there's a lot to be said for that argument. I think it would be difficult for people to really argue against it. But having said that, I don't know that there are any real right or wrong answers. I think whatever you decide to do will have an element of those people who will be criticizing you no matter what. Interestingly, after our discussion yesterday about the buses, they've now decided to turn the air conditioning on for bus travel, thankfully. Apparently there was almost a riot amongst the bus drivers who felt that they couldn't survive in those conditions. I definitely feel for them. Okay.
I didn't even think about them. Selfishly. So were you thinking about the bus drivers?
No, not at all.
I honestly didn't spare them a thought, but I thought of myself as a passenger. Shows you how self-absorbed I am. Not that I'm even in Israel or have ever taken a bus there, but still, it's not the point.
As a passenger, you would spend a few moments or perhaps up to an hour on the ride, where these poor bus drivers have got to spend the whole day doing this. So I suppose it makes a lot of sense that they had something to say about this. So air conditioning is back on the buses, still limited to 20 people. So obviously some changes taking place. But at the moment, it just feels as if there's a certain loss of control, and until such time as somebody can come and really put their arms around it and bring things back to a more manageable level, I think we're going to see this growing discontent. I mean, a lot of business owners feeling that shutting things down right now, particularly amongst the events hall owners and restaurateurs and bar owners, those people are feeling very badly done by at the moment. The country has decided to extend national insurance payments to those people who've lost their jobs for an additional period of time until the end of the year to try somehow to financially help people through this particular crisis. It's costing the country dear. There's a lot of discussion about how difficult it is, even though these national insurance payments are being made available, but you've got to jump through hoops and you've got to fill out forms and you've got to qualify and you've got to, you know, they seem to be making it very, very difficult for people to be able to claim under these programs. And so that doesn't help the situation either. So yeah, a lot of people saying that this is not going well at the moment, and of course pointing fingers in the direction of the government. And when you have senior public health officials resigning in a storm, angry letters being published, it doesn't necessarily doesn't help the situation.
Yeah. Just to discuss this other issue, which I find fascinating. The banks in the Palestinian Authority area have been refusing to pay stipends to terrorists for fear of Israeli sanctions. Obviously, this has been a very contentious subject and one that for many of us is absolutely devastating and horrific, that terrorists get paid for carrying out acts of terror on against Jews. But what has led to this situation now, that these stipends are not being paid?
Well, Israel has tried to use a number of different avenues to put pressure on the Palestinian Authority not to pay money to people to reward them for carrying out acts of terror. And all of those attempts have really failed up until now. Israel has withheld money from the Palestinian Authority in its regular payment that it needs to make. Don't forget that Israel collects money on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, tax money, VAT, other money, because they don't have the facility to do so. And the agreement is that the money is collected by the Israeli authorities and then handed over to the Palestinian Authority for them to use in their state coffers to pay salaries and things like that to government employees. And so Israel has decided in its wisdom over time to put a lot of pressure on the Palestinian Authority to withhold some of this money so that it effectively is not available to be paid out to those who have committed acts of terror, to encourage the international community to withhold donations to the Palestinian Authority as a sanction for them carrying out this payment, the payment of these stipends. But Israel even took things a step further and enacted a law which basically said that individual workers and owners of banks who are responsible for making those payments, so the money generally comes from the Palestinian Authority to banks, and the banks then go about paying out individuals who are authorized to receive the money. So Israel had threatened, saying that they would arrest individuals who are involved with those banks, either work for the banks or have some sort of ownership stake in the bank. They would arrest people and they would hold them criminally liable for paying out terrorists in the event that they do so. And interestingly, this seems to have worked because four banks who operate within the Palestinian Authority area have now taken it upon themselves to refuse to pay out these stipends. And I think that that's the most effective thing that Israel has managed to do so far, because these individuals fear that Israel might come in and arrest them, hold them personally responsible. And so this seems to have been a very, very effective action. And let's see whether it will extend to the other banks. I think there are 13 banks all in all operating there.
Before I let you go, one of our listeners, Jenny, saying, how does Israel know what payments are being made by the Palestinian banks?
So it's a good question, Jenny, and it's a question that I'm not sure I can answer immediately. But I think that obviously to the extent that money is flowing backwards and forwards, Israel has some level of control over a lot of the things that flow back and forth, either open visibility of these transactions or perhaps even some intelligence information that might be going on in the background. But I will check out the answer to that question. I'll come back to you. But certainly the banks are feeling nervous, and that's what really counts. They feel that they might be held personally responsible. So hopefully this will go some way towards preventing people, terrorists, from receiving money to reward them for these acts of terror.
Unbelievable story. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you same time, same place tomorrow. Here's your news.